this idea that Governor Rauner talks about universities as if they're bloated or top heavy. I don't know how you take the assets of your state and demonize them. It doesn't make any sense, especially institutions of higher learning. So I believe in greater investment and making sure that we're recruiting more students to our universities. Because by the way, SIU is the economic engine, right? And so it's not just the kids, the students that come here to get an education. It's all the supporting businesses that do well and thrive as a result of the students here in town, the property tax base, the sales tax base. This is all connected. And so, again, demonizing these institutions is just wrong. And I'm not quite sure what Governor Rauner's MO is.
There are a lot of people who wonder whether the stalemate can be broken, the stalemate between Governor Rauner and the Democratic leaders in the House and Senate, the stalemate between the Democrats and Republicans in Springfield. Can you talk a little bit about your bipartisan work and how you would shake this up, to use another phrase, but how you could break this logjam?
The interesting thing about Governor Rauner is, like President Trump, he sold himself as someone who's an expert negotiator, a deal maker, a great businessman. And now that he's in office, he's throwing his hands up and say, "I can't get anything done. It's someone else's fault. It's not. It's never on me. It's this person's fault." That's bizarre. And I think it accurately portrays what happens when you try to just simply force business principles onto government. Because the thing with running a government and democracy is that you have to bring people together, build coalitions, foster collaborative conversations, and compromise. That's what makes our democracy work. That's what makes our government work. And so my perspective has always been is you bring people together, you have a conversation. I have a background in emergency management. And what emergency managers do during a disaster is they don't act like they know everything. What they do is they convene the experts in their subject matter areas, bring them to the table, make sure they have all the resources they need to bring to bear, and then have a conversation about how to deploy those resources in the most efficient way. And sometimes that requires compromise, but you are a convener. And that's what chief executives should be doing, is they should be convening, having a robust conversation, and then making a decision. Not demonizing one group against the next, not pitting one group of working people against the other. That just keeps us divided, and we never get focused on the real issues like income inequality or, you know, issues that we all can benefit from, like universal child care or criminal justice reform or a real capital bill.
For people who have been watching the budget impasse, but not necessarily directly touched by it, what would you say to them in terms of how you rebuild the budget? How do you right the fiscal ship of the state? Is the New Deal going to do that, or do you need something in addition to that?
The thing about the New Deal that we're proposing is that we're asking all of us to come together as a state and invest in one another. And once you start investing in people and in living wage jobs, you start creating mobility for people. You start creating economic engines in communities. It goes, when I think about what FDR did, he built, you know, the post offices that we still use today, the national parks, all kinds of public facilities that not only helped people get back to work, restored dignity to work, but provided a living wage. And when you pay a living wage, guess what? People spend those dollars in their communities. They go to shops, they buy things. That shop then pays sales taxes to the state. People go buy homes, they pay property taxes. So this becomes a sort of perpetuating circle in that when you provide dignity and a living wage to people across a state, that also benefits government, right? Because you see a multiplier effect elsewhere in the economy. So it's important to recognize that a budget is a statement of our morals, it's a statement of our priorities. And if our priorities on paper are to strip away benefits and wages, then that's a reflection of the morality and the moral compass of the leadership. And we know that's not who we are. That's not who the state is. And that's why we need to pass a budget that is fair, just, and inclusive.
When you talk about a living wage, is there a target? Do you have a minimum wage level that you'd like it to be?
I mean, I've worked with SEIU and the Fight for 15. I believe strongly in what they're doing. I think more importantly, or just as importantly, we have to recognize that collective bargaining rights have to be protected. You know, Missouri is going right to work today. So we're an island here in Illinois. But this is the birthplace of collective bargaining and unions. And we have to remember that penalizing one group of working people and by taking their rights away isn't going to help another group of working people. It's unions that help secure the 8-hour workday, that help get child labor out of our factories. It's unions that help make sure that we had paid time off. It's unions in Chicago that worked with me that led the drive to ensure that people have paid sick leave. So this idea that somehow if we got rid of protections for one group of working people, we'll help another group of working people, is the same logic that the plutocracy uses on the rest of us, which is help us get richer and then we'll sprinkle some scraps on the rest of you folks. That's never worked. That'll never work going forward, and we have to fight that.
If I could play devil's advocate for just a moment, mm-hmm. There are a lot of people in this region, business owners, who say that they're going to pick up and move to Missouri, to Indiana, to Kentucky, because their workers' compensation costs are lower in those states, and because of the threat that a minimum wage hike might be coming, or union costs. How do you keep those people in Illinois when, according to their bottom line, it's more economical to go somewhere else?
So on workman's comp, remember, in Illinois, there's a defined benefit. In other states, if you have a workman's comp filed against you, you have to go to court, and you have to pay attorney's fees, and you might be caught up in court for years. You know who benefits from that? It's not small businesses. See, that's the thing. Guys like Bruce Rauner like to tell small businesses that they benefit by going to trial. The only people who benefit by going to trial are the big businesses that can afford to tie poor people up in court for years and years and years. It's only guys like Bruce Rauner that can tie up court cases where people just get scared to even file anything. Small businesses benefit from a very predictable system. That's what I would urge them to look at, which is have a conversation about what we actually pay in workman's comp and worker protections, because it's a very defined benefit. Whereas if you went to other states, you know, you're going to have to find some high-priced attorneys to defend you, and you might be in court for years and years on one claim. That is not stability. That it does not cost less. All that does is benefit big business. And so we have to stop letting big business use small business as the pawns in this conversation.